The Labor Day event from Dell Technologies is here, and it's time to take productivity to another level. End the summer strong by upgrading your growing business to the latest tech. This new season begins with up to 48% off top performance laptops like Bostro, taking performance to the next level with 12th gen Intel Core processors. You'll also save big on monitors, docks, mice, and more must-have accessories. Plus, get free shipping on everything. It's the perfect time to get ahead with powerful tech designed to stay motivated throughout the year and encourage collaboration and innovation among your team. Now, at special prices for a limited time only. Summer might be gone, but it's just the beginning. What's next for you? Upgrade today by calling 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL to save up to 48% on our latest technology. So, Saban spoke...
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
...to the media yesterday.
I didn't really say that anybody did anything wrong.
Is Jimbo lying?
Oh, I have no problem with Jimbo at all.
The Rich Eisen Show.
He said he bought their players. Saban said some sort of national leveling of the playing field on NIL.
Earlier on the show, veteran NBA reporter Mark Stein, NBA on TNT analyst Kenny Smith. Coming up from HBO's Barry, actor Bill Hader. Plus your phone calls, latest news, and more. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Well, this is going to be a fun hour. I know it. I can feel it. I feel it in my bones. And I don't usually come on, hour three and say stuff like that. Hour two, maybe. I feel it. We got Bill Hader coming up in 20 minutes, and his show Barry is directing a lot of these episodes. It has gotten darker and darker, but still has a sense of humor about it. And he is coming up in just a couple of minutes time, 20 minutes to be exact, to talk about the season 3 finale that's coming up next week. This terrific HBO program, Barry. Bill Hader is joining us shortly. If you missed anything, youtube.com/RichEisenShow for anything that you may have missed. So a lot is in fact happening because there's mini camps all over the place in the NFL. And we haven't really hit on some of that. And later on in this hour, Tua has spoken today.
Oh,
and it seems like Tua's getting a little salt in his diet, which is great.
I saw Mike McDaniel spoke today.
Yeah,
also.
A little salt in his diet. A little salt in his diet.
Okay,
yeah, I'm here for that. That's coming up later on in this hour. Also, Mike Trout spoke. Commissioner Mike Trout has spoken.
Should his nickname now be the Commissioner?
The Commish.
Right? Commissioner Trout has spoken. Commissioner Trout's team, which has suddenly hit a major swoon, is playing right now. Ohtani has been taken deep. By Matt Carpenter, who's been a terrific addition for the Yankees, and Gleyber Torres down 2-0 as Cy Young Award candidate, and he damn straight is. Nestor Cortez is on the mound for the Yankees today in a double dip. Could you imagine you're a Yankee fan or a New York fan, diehard Ohtani fan, and you have tickets to a game on Wednesday night, and it gets rained out, and it's like, hey, Thursday 1 o'clock,
day,
Thursday
man.
Day, got to go see him now. At any rate, so we'll hit on a lot. So there's a lot to pack into this third hour, especially since there's been some news breaking in the NFL. Two retirements today in the NFL. Two very popular players, one of whom's going to the Hall of Fame. We'll have that conversation in a second. If there was a Hall of Fame for excitement, based on excitement alone, pure adulation, the remarkable stretch of football that this man played in the NFL for 9 different teams.
Unreal.
That this man played at a level that not only was fascinating and interesting, but also unprecedented in terms of the number of opportunities he kept getting. If he was on your team and you were starting quarterback, you had to have your head on a swivel because this guy was going to get the start at some point. And his name is Ryan Fitzpatrick. He has announced his retirement from the NFL. 2005 is when he first burst onto the scene out of Harvard. You know, in the same way that, you know, Matthew Stafford and Clayton Kershaw were teammates. Right. went to the same high school as Drew Brees. All those facts that you keep hearing over and over and over again. Right up at the top there is Ryan. Did you know Ryan Fitzpatrick went to Harvard?
No way.
Yeah, this
no,
just ended.
Like the Harvard?
Yes.
Harvard.
Really?
Yes.
Had no idea.
Like Jerome Bettis is from Detroit.
And this guy came in from Harvard absolutely firing. And firing into windows he had no business throwing into. And certainly somebody smart enough to get into Harvard should know not to throw into those windows.
Right. Don't make those passes.
But, man, did he kept making those passes. Showed up, and he was with St. Louis with the Rams back in the day. Fresh-faced rookie out of Harvard. Look at him. Wow. There he is.
That even look like
that's
him.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, people.
You could never pick that guy out of a lineup.
By the way, if you gave me $100, I would not guess that was him.
No, of course not.
There he is.
Never seen that picture.
There he is. And then guy, okay. Look at that kid out of Harvard. He does look like Good Will Hunting, although he went to MIT, didn't he? Okay. There you go. Ryan Fitzpatrick. Department of Economics out of Harvard University, went to the St. Louis Rams and then stopped for 2 years in Cincinnati and then showed up in Buffalo, New York. And he was there for 4 years. And then at some point, he got the chance to start. He started all 16 games for the 2011 and 2012 Buffalo Bills. Best record, though, was 6-10. Tennessee Titans collected him then. Played 1 year there. You bet. He started 9 games. Got a shot there. Went 3-6. Then he went to the Houston Texans. You wound up starting 12 games there. It's just amazing. He goes to a spot and you think, okay, he's our backup or he's our guy. He can get you a few games here and there. And then he starts.
So plants you start.
Exactly what happened when he showed up at the Jets. That was Geno Smith's team. Until Geno apparently owed somebody some money, and I.K. Enampali rearranged his jaw, and suddenly, who's the starting quarterback? Ryan Fitzpatrick. And who started winging it around and gave the Jets a chance at the playoffs? Ryan Fitzpatrick. And he went 10-6 for those Jets in 2015. Then the Jets tried to run it back with him and went 3-8 in his 11 starts the next year. So the Bucs said, let's get him. Bucks said, let's get him, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers wound up giving him 10 starts over 2 years, and that's when we began to truly fall in love with this guy, because he would come up with 500-yard passing games and then show up to post-game press conferences looking like Conor McGregor.
He really went for it.
He goes for it, man, with the shades and the beard and then as much hair on his chest than his beard. And we find out, you know, his family life, he's got tons of kids, he's a fun dad, and he's just going out there living his best life. Then the Bucks move on from him. He goes to Miami. Okay, what's he going to do there? Well, crush it like only he can. He wound up going there. There he is showing up in the pandemic looking like, again, an hourglass, right? You can't tell which is the top, which is the bottom with his hair and his beard.
That's pretty funny.
And he was showing two of the ropes, right? They even had to turn back to him. They turned aside from him to give Tua the gig, even though Tua hadn't quote-unquote earned it. But he was Tua, and they drafted him in the top, you know, five. So they had to go to him, and they did. And Fitz was there as the consummate professional. At one point, they even turned back to him later in the season when Tua was struggling.
Yeah.
And then he got a shot with the Washington football team, and I thought, like, this was it, man. He was going to be set up and get one more chance. Showed up at training camp his first day with this incredible blackboard like he was going to kindergarten, first day of year 17. His teacher is Mr. Rivera. 38 years old. He's 74 inches tall. His friends are Terry and Curtis, as in McLaurin and Samuel. Happy first day indeed. And then he got hurt and never played again after one start with the Washington football team. That's it. Got hurt. And that's the end of that.
Bummer.
And we will not see the last of him. I hear he's going to Amazon. That's where I hear he's going.
Ah.
I think we're going to see him on Thursday nights.
I think he's going to be great.
And he's going to be a lot of fun. And I just hope his opinions are like those missiles he would throw into tight windows. And I think fans are dig him. They love him. He's a likable guy with a head on his shoulders and a big future ahead of him. And I say to Ryan Fitzpatrick, good luck, sir. Thanks for everything. The last we saw of Ryan Fitzpatrick at an NFL game was in Buffalo in the stands during the wild card boat racing of the New England Patriots with his shirt off. And fans digging it. And every man, a Harvard man,
Harvard,
a man who just kept getting opportunity after opportunity and did what he could best with it and gave us so many thrills, so many incredible games, so many wonderful performances, a fantasy football darling for many years. Vaya con Dios, Ryan Fitzpatrick. We'll see you on TV next. And then there's Frank Gore. Frank Gore is signing a one-day contract with the San Francisco 49ers to finally retire from the NFL. And the next time you see the Inconvenient Truth, who I nicknamed him, which is what I gave him that nickname. This is way back in the day when he was, you know, running for the 49ers and the Al Gore documentary, The Inconvenient Truth, was in theaters near you and very popular, and Frank was crushing it for the Niners. And I was doing the game day highlights show with Mooch and Dion on NFL Network, The Inconvenient Truth. He was exactly that. Came off the campus at Miami. You take a look at the top 10 running back list, the most prolific rushers in the history of the National Football League, and Frank Gore is above Barry Sanders and beneath Walter Payton with exactly 16,000 rushing yards. Emmett's in the hall. Walter's in the hall. Barry Sanders is fourth on the list, is in the hall. Adrian Peterson's going to the hall. Curtis Martin is in the hall. LaDainian Tomlinson is in the hall. Jerome Bettis is in the hall. Eric Dickerson's in the hall. Tony Dorsett's in the hall. Frank Gore's going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And in case anybody's out there, and I am talking to the man across the studio from us here.
I don't want to do this again.
Now, I know you don't want to do it again, and I certainly on a day like this, but you do give voice to a lot of people who feel like he's just a stat compiler. He's just stuck around for very long. And what did he really do? Here are two accomplishments. You say, well, what was the game that stood out? Unfortunately, when you lose the Super Bowl, it doesn't stand out for you. But Frank Gore in the Super Bowl in New Orleans on the 3rd of February, 2013, in the Superdome against the Baltimore Ravens, 19 rushes for 110 yards and a score. It's entirely possible if Kaepernick does find Crabtree in the end zone and Jim is the Harbaugh who wins that day and not John, it's entirely possible Frank Gore could have been in the mix for the most valuable player of that game.
Yep.
Kaepernick probably would have won it. I don't know. Ravens fans would have said the most valuable person of the game was whoever purposefully unplugged the Superdome from the New Orleans electrical grid. As Ray Lewis to this day still contends.
Kaepernick had a nice game that day. 300 yards and 60 rushing and a touchdown.
He might have been the MVP and then have a whole different conversation about that,
too. He definitely would have been MVP with the 300,
right,
Chris.
But Frank had a heck of a day.
He did. He actually had a good playoff run.
And he did. He did indeed. And then there's this particular statistic that I got from the NFL Network when I asked, who is the oldest player to rush for 1,000 yards in a season? John Riggins and John Henry Johnson, both in the Hall of Fame, each had 1,000-yard rushing seasons in their age 35 season. How about that?
Wow.
Riggins in 84 had 1,239 rush yards, and John Henry Johnson had just over 1,000 yards, 1,048 in 1964. Only two other running backs have had 1,000-yard rushing yards in their age 31 season or older since 2010. Adrian Peterson had 1,042 in his age 33 season in 2018. And Frank Gore led the Colts in rushing in 2016 when he was 33 with 1,025 rushing yards. And in 2014, he was 31 and he had 1,106 rushing yards.
Age 34.
Correct. In 2014, he was 31. And he was
age 34, correct, in Indianapolis, when he had 961 rush yards. 33, he had 1,025. I mean, could you imagine? The question is, will we ever see a 1,000-yard rushing season from somebody age 33 again?
Not the way they're running through Correct. Running backs these days, Rich.
Well, also, the running the ball is just not as emphasized.
We might not see it again. So.
But that stat alone shouldn't get you in the
I know that, but you put it all together. 16,000 rush yards is no joke, man.
Right.
Honestly, Emmett, Walter.
Great?
I know that, but he doesn't want to go there again.
But
he says he doesn't want to go there again.
He thinks Ryan Fitzpatrick should be in the Hall of Fame.
Ryan Fitzpatrick has had a more memorable career than Frank Gore.
Yeah, I got to be honest. When you were giving your Ryan Fitzpatrick soliloquy and saying all the excitement, I don't know. Through 223 touchdowns and 169 picks.
No,
he never started
I'm
over
14 I'm not saying he should be
games.
In the Hall of Fame in a million years.
Oh, no,
I don't agree with him by any stretch of the imagination.
I think we're romanticizing the guy.
Well, because, look, in the day and age where there's conversation like this on shows like this, there's social media where you now see immediately what people say right after a game or look like right after a game, and you see people having fun. There's less fun sometimes. You know, we live in a day and age where a guy shows up with a backwards ball cap and a phone going to a post-game show, and he goes on his show the next day and says that's indicative of somebody not taking the job seriously. Like, that's the world we live in, like heart attack funny, right? And then Fitz shows up, and he's got chest hair and beard and all that stuff and a tracksuit and whatever. So, of course, that's fun. There's not enough of that.
Also,
it's endearing.
Frank showed us any personality.
But Frank is a different guy. He's just a different cat from a different spot, different place, different lot in life. And what he's done with his life is unbelievable. And in terms of football and what you put down on the field and in the record books, this guy is a surefire Hall of Famer and should make it 5 years from today. That's the way I view him. Let's take a break. Bill Hader of Barry. When we come back on HBO on The Rich Eisen Show, this will be fun. Don't go anywhere. Does your antiperspirant keep you dry all day? Dove Men Plus Care Dry Spray goes on instantly dry for a cleaner feel and offers 48 hours sweat and odor protection. Let me repeat that. 48 hours of sweat and odor protection. Use it and don't even think about it. Also, Dove Men Dry Spray contains Dove's unique one-quarter moisturizing cream that helps protect your skin. Try Dove Men Plus Care Dry Spray. Goes on dry, clean feel all day. We're back here on The Rich Eisen Show here on NBC Sports on Peacock, NBC Sports Audio, Sirius XM Channel 85, our Odyssey app, our The Rich Eisen Show terrestrial radio listeners coast to coast. Love this guy, man. Love his television show, even though it's gotten very, very dark this year. It's as terrific a program as there is on television. It's called Barry, and it airs Sundays at 10 p.m. Eastern on HBO, available for streaming on HBO Max the next day as well. And then also, by the way, we had Stephen Root on just a few weeks ago, correct? He plays Fuchs.
Correct.
And we have Henry Winkler on next week.
Oh,
that's
epic.
How it shows you how much we love this program. The Primetime Emmy Award winner for lead actor in this very comedy series, twice over, is back here on The Rich Eisen Show. Bill Hader, how you been, Bill?
Hey, how are you guys? Pretty good.
How's that? How was that introduction? Did I get it verbatim? As I got it from your people? Did I get that right?
Yeah. Just so you know, the show gets way darker.
Oh my God! So here's the deal. I've got three small children. Small.
They should not be watching.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
They should not be anywhere near it.
They're 13, 11, and 8. So my wife and I have to make sure that they're not only in bed but staying in bed, and they're way out before it. So. We're through episode 4 of this season.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So I'm a couple behind, but I can already sense though that
it just gets so much worse.
Well, I could sense that midnight is kind of struck for Barry in terms of trying to live this double life. It's just not working out anymore.
Yeah. It gets way worse. I mean, that's the funny thing when the season finale. We have this very nice guy who does who is a colorist on the episodes, which is in post-production.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, usually it takes me a day with one of these episodes, but the finale took him a couple of days because he kept on having to take breaks.
Really?
It was too intense. And I said, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, because there are some moments again where it looks like you've got to go to a particularly dark place. I mean, how are you getting to that place, Bill? Do I have to be genuinely concerned here?
I don't know. Oh no. I mean, it's just you're playing the character, and
right.
You know, it's only a matter of time before the guy everything starts coming to a head. You know, so it was always. I feel like since the series started, what you're seeing has always been underneath. And I think when we started reading or writing season 3, it was like, okay, now this stuff can all start coming to the surface because he's cornered, you know. So you're kind of seeing the real guy. But, yeah, people going, oh, Barry's so mean and he's so awful. And I'm going, well, he's kind of always been this way. You know? Like, he killed his best friend, you know. For doing nothing, you know, in the first season. I mean, you know, he's not a good guy.
Well, I kind of like sometimes too, Bill, the commentary on this town and this business as well that lurks and bubbles beneath the surface and sometimes pops up, that a psychopath could be a successful actor in this town and get gigs and get parts. And then, you know, I've been enjoying just a little stroll down history of, again, the Henry Winkler character, the acting coach, now former acting coach, in Mr. Cousineau, running into other people from his acting career who despise him, including Joe Mantegna. That was a great little cameo.
He is a great guy. He's in episode 5 as well, and he is the greatest guy. Huge Cubs fan. We just talked about the Cubs, and just one of the nicest guys on the planet. You know, he played golf with Michael Jordan once, and I got to ask him about that. And I don't know, he's just, you know, and he was like, can I improvise? And I said, yeah, you know, do whatever you want. And he goes, you know, doing all those mammoth plays, you can't change a word. You know? And I was like, oh, right. You originated, you know, Richard Roma and Glengarry Glen Ross. I mean, the guys, you know, a legend, you know, so that we were really excited to have him there.
Was he ever, did you meet him on SNL? Did you guys go back?
No, the first time I ever met him was when I called him and said, would you be interested in playing yourself? Because, you know, a lot of actors don't want to play themselves, which is totally understandable.
Sure.
And he, you know, I was like, are you comfortable with this? And he, yeah, sure, yeah, I'll do it.
And so that, why'd you choose Joe Mantegna? How did that come about?
It kind of was perfect. You know, Sherry Thomas, our casting director, we had this part. We said it would be great if he ran into somebody that Cousineau came up with who made it, you know?
Yes.
And we had a list of people, and on that list was Joe Mantegna. And we just went, yeah, Joe Mantegna, he'd be amazing. And would he do it? And then he was so game and so played it so real, you know? He didn't try to push the comedy or anything, and he was really great.
But the restraining order that he needed is not—that's not real, Bill. I mean, he needed a restraining.
Well, having him, Henry Winkler, and Fred Melamed on set one day was just one of the most fun things ever. Because those guys have so many stories, and they've been around for so long, and just been working forever, and they were so funny together. It was just fun having them. Those three guys in a scene together.
Again, because, so cool. You know, and Bill Hader here on the Rich Eisen Show, we're talking about Barry, Sundays, 10 p.m. Eastern on HBO. I can't get past, even though he's so terrific in this, and I do get lost in the scene, so let's not, I'm not telling any terrible tales out of school here, but, I mean, this is the Fonz, right? I mean, like, that's the end and end-all be-all, and he's just one of the sweetest people in real life, Henry Winkler.
Oh, yeah,
right?
He really is so nice. He brings food to the set, even though there's, you know...
Wait a minute,
Henry, we have a whole craft service truck, and he goes, I know, but Stacy, my wife, she made this cake, and I just, the crew has to have just a little piece of it, you know. He is just so, and he's always, you know, he said one time, if you have like a disagreement with him, how to play a scene, and we had a couple, and I go, no, you know, Henry, I really think it's this, and it never gets tense. He just kind of states his piece of, I feel like it should be this, and I go, I hear you, but I think for the purpose of this, maybe go this way with it, and let's try it, you know, just give me a shot this way and just see how it feels. And he'll do it, And then he'll come over to me and hug me, and he goes, within your structure is freedom.
Sounds like a fortune cookie.
Yeah, it was like a fortune cookie. I was like, right. Thank you.
That is fantastic. You got a good story at all that he's told that sticks out in your mind?
Well, I will say for Happy Days, the thing that was wild was we were shooting the ending of season 2 where he sits up in bed and realizes, you know, that Barry, you know, killed, or that Fuchs is saying Barry killed Janice Moss, his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And we're shooting that scene, which is the last shot of the whole season, and we're trying to make it work. And that was when he chose the moment, because we were on stage 19 at Paramount, and he said, you know, this is where we did Happy Days. And the whole place just went dead silent. And we went, say that again? He goes, this is where we did Happy Days. And immediately, what do you think the first thing everybody said was?
Was, can you turn the lights out by just hitting the wall or something
like that?
Where's
the jukebox?
I was close.
Where was it? Yeah, exactly. And he goes, oh, I'll show you. And we took a 45-minute break, which is a lot, where everybody just walked around, and he walked us and just painted the picture of what the Happy Days set. And he goes, I would stand here, and then I would, you know, and this, there's the audience and everything. And we just were like, you know, it's, you know, he, to me, he was television. It was like Mickey Mouse and the Fonz. Like, it was like, as a kid, I was like, oh, that's like your TV. And then there he is. And he'll go into Fonzie sometimes. And when he does, you're just like, this, what's happening? And I'm his boss.
Right. What's happening? I believe a different ABC show at the time.
Yeah.
But, you know,
What's happening was a totally different era.
Yes, it definitely was.
Shout out to Rerun.
Next season on Barry, we're going to get the whole cast back.
Bill Hader here on the Rich Eisen Show. Your co-creator and collaborator on this is Alec Berg, who has a history of terrific comedy from obviously Silicon Valley, most recently Curb, Seinfeld, and things of that nature. I am friendly with him, and I said, you were coming on today, and I'm like, what should I ask him? And he sent me just one line back on an email, Bill, saying, ask him to do his Hawaiian accent.
Hawaiian accent?
Yes.
Oh, what? Oh, you know what? We have a guy named, and maybe some of this guy named Gavin Kleintop, who's our first AD, who I love, and he's from Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
But forever we thought he was from New York. Because he talks like, all right, guys, here we go. Like, he's very, like, blunt and to the point. And then you're like, where'd you grow up? And he's like, I grew up on Makalakalaka Street. And we... That was the bit that we would do, more of like a New York accent, but being like, hey, when I grew up on the island, you know.
No kidding. I had no idea.
It wasn't that funny, and I apologize at that.
No, don't apologize for it. Alec Berg should be a better producer than that, man.
No, yeah, Alec, I think a better, Alec, wait, weren't you the one telling me that Alec, when he putts, uses like a big...
Yes.
Telescope.
No, what I told you is there's a, you know, a device where you can tell on the golf course how far you're currently standing from the flagstick. I mean, it's and it's a device that people use after they've driven the ball. They're 200 yards out or 180 yards out, so, and actually does help decide which club to use in order to make sure you get the green. He used it when he's standing 10 feet from the hole. That's when he started. Like, he's standing there on the edge of the green. He's on the apron right there, and it's just like 20. It's maybe a 20-foot chip, and he's standing there with this. And I just turn. I'm like, really? Like, are you really doing that? Like, I only human I've ever seen do that, ever.
Yeah, he's an interest. Yeah, he's an interest. That makes that totally tracks. The thing everybody at Barry right now is obsessed with. Sports related, why is that whole Jock Peterson getting hit thing?
It is my favorite.
I don't know if he understands, like, because I'm friends with John Boy, so I keep texting him going, what's happening?
Right.
So he texts me stuff, and then Ryan Johnson, the director, like, there's so many vast people, friends of mine, who are all have you seen this? Like, even not even like baseball fans, just going like, this is the craziest, weirdest thing. And then we all kind of looked at the meme that he sent, and we were all kind of fascinated by, like, that pissed him off.
But, Bill, I think the thing that, because trust me, we have parsed this out.
I don't know. So what am I missing? Are you guys surprised by this? Or?
We have parsed this out like it's the biggest story in the history of sports. Okay, because it is. But by the way, it's not because we're bored and we're trying to pass the time until football starts. But no, this truly is one of the greatest sports stories of all time, because I don't know what fascinates me more: the fact that this was a fantasy football argument that then a meme within the chat got things sideways, or the fact that he's been sitting on this spite for 7 months. And on sight, slaps him.
On sight.
On sight.
The video of him hitting him, to me, looks like an elementary school fight. And then Jock Peterson, when he's showing the thing, he's dressed like a third grader.
Because he's got a knapsack on. Yeah.
There's something very, like, and he's so kind of contrite about it. And like, I don't know. But here's, and him describing the meme is one of the most surreal and funny things I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, it had like Stephen Wright delivery, you know, like it had that cadence and sort of underscored aspect. But then the hat looking askew, like Bazooka Joe, is like the look he had.
It really was like I expected him to take, like, you know, a stick and a tire and be like, "All right, guys, see you later," and then run off. Like a little, like our gang was like, "Hey, Jack, come on."
And then all of a sudden we find out Mike Trout is the commissioner, like one of the most famous baseball players on planet Earth.
And he's like, "I'm out. I don't want to talk about this." He's like, "I can't talk about this."
There's nothing better. It just gets better.
It really hits so many facets where you're like, what? Because I don't know that much about baseball, but I have been asking friends, and everybody is just going like, okay. I got a call. You know, it's one of those things when you text, "Hey, can you explain this Sam Jock fight?" And it's the next text is, "Let me call you."
It's too much to type.
I can't even text this.
It's too much to type. So we,
like, I can't text it. Let me just call you.
So we handled it the only way we could, which is to come up with the top 10 fantasy team names with the word "fam" in it to piss him off even more. We came up.
I wouldn't want to make that guy bad.
I know. Wham, wham, bam. Thank you, fam. Another one was "Fam Goes the Dynamite." That's our favorite one.
Silence of the Fams.
Family Feud.
Family Feud.
Brian Kelly's family.
That's good. Yep.
The Fam to Venice.
If it's basketball, Jock Fams Volume 1.
I do not like green eggs and fam.
Yeah, we did it all. We did it all. We just kept going and going. Because it's too much. It's too good. It's too good.
I'm nervous for you guys. Yeah, I wouldn't want to make that guy mad.
I don't want to get slapped.
Yes.
The video does look like you're on a playground and you should yell for a teacher or something. Going like, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa.
Mrs. Jenkins."
So you guys are all talking about it and in the Barry community?
It's become the editors, post people, writers,
fantastic.
Our producer, who doesn't care anything about baseball, everybody's just like, "Did you see this?" Like, "Can we get to the bottom of this?"
Oh,
I was like,
my gosh.
"This is wild."
It sure is, man.
Just every step of it is like, if you put it in a comedy, you would go, "Oh, but we can't dress him like a third grader."
I mean, this would have to be if SNL was in season, this would have to.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you couldn't do it. It's like it's done.
It's like, how do you satirize it? It is done. It's
done.
True.
It's like going like, you know, "Cook the turkey. The turkey's cooked.
You can't improve on it."
It's like, we're served it.
Oh,
like,
my God. Well, Bill, congrats on another amazing season of Barry.
Thanks, bud.
Is there a season 4, do you think, or what?
Yeah, we're working on a season 4 right now. And
okay.
That starts shooting in a couple months, yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. I'm so happy about that. I can't wait to finish the end of this season and then see season four.
Way far away. It gets very dark, so keep them away.
Definitely make sure that they're in bed. We'll wait 15 minutes, a nice 15-minute grace period, and then we'll move on.
Yeah, please.
You take care of yourself, Bill Hader. Thanks again for the call, brother.
You guys.
Thanks again. There's Bill Hader, everybody.
Bill Hader is one of the goats.
Yeah, he is.
Amazing.
I love that. He's like, did you see this? And you sent in the text. Did you see this thing? And then I'll call you.
Let me call you.
It's like, I can't even be bothered to type this out. I have to speak this to you.
It would be one of those things. Like, it'd be so long.
Oh my gosh.
Talk to text. No, I got to.
Every time he's on, my sides hurt. I just laugh. He giggles
I gotta,
too.
I got to massage my cheeks.
Oh my gosh. All right, so Mike Trout has spoken. We got a hit on that. And Tua has spoken as well. Salty Tua.
Whoa.
I've never heard Salty Tua.
I haven't heard it. It reads salty. The page as if there's a little salt in Tua's diet.
Oh, let's see it.
Oh, my man.
It's coming up next right here on this edition of the Rich Eisen Show. That's funny. Back here on the show, 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. Let's take the phone call. Dave in Baltimore is just chiming in before we head out of Dodge. What's up, Dave?
Good afternoon, Rich. Please indulge me. I actually am a native Buckeye. I bleed scarlet and gray.
Okay.
However, Mr. Rich Eisen from the school up north, I want to compliment you as an old radio executive for many years.
Okay.
You do something that is gold medal, blue ribbon, better than anybody. And I listen to every talk show out there. When you interview people, it's tell us about your reporting, Mark Stein. John Harbaugh, tell us what you found out. You always, so thankfully, say people's names in the middle of a show where others, and I mean so many others on the national level, Rich, say, never say the name, and they talk for 20 minutes, and you don't know who they're talking to. So I want to compliment you and thank you for your professionalism, for your intellect, and also for mentioning people's names in the middle of interviews. Thank you.
No, I appreciate that, Dave, and I appreciate you saying what you said and leading with your chin the way that you did, and interesting how you say it's gold standard and blue ribbon. You know, those two colors are associated with the finest of the fine. And you know, when you put those together, what's school up north? It's maize. It's kind of like maize standard. But you understand what I'm saying, right, Dave?
That was quick, Rich. I didn't even think of that. Compliments to you again.
Thank you, sir. Safe driving there. You go. There goes Dave and Ballmer right there.
Dave walked into that one.
By the way, I believe it's 20 years ago today, The Wire first premiered.
No way, really?
I think, speaking of Baltimore. Wow. I think I saw that today on my Twitter feed. So, look, everybody thinks Tua is not the guy in Miami. There's a lot of people who think that. There's no gray area with Tua. Let's start with that.
Oh, no. I mean,
You either think he has no shot in this league. He's just a guy who just happened to have one great throw for Alabama one time and then one season where he wasn't the same guy and he got hurt. And the Dolphins were had by him when he made that one throw and he had them at hello. There's one, that's one end. And then there's the other end where you love him no matter what because you love who he is, you love what he stands for, you love the inside. You ignore the film. That's the sense that people have because they call them Tuanon. Those are the Tuanon people.
Tuanon, it's real.
And so the Dolphins' social media outfit didn't really do him many favors when they had him. They showed a video of him throwing to Tyreek Hill in practice because they're very excited that Tyreek Hill is now there.
Yep.
And the ball wasn't one of those. Let's just put it this way. It wasn't one of those classic NFL films zero in
tight
on the
zoom,
on the tight
then,
zoom
then
on the spiral, right? And you pull out and it hits the guy in stride. Tyreek had to like slow down to grab
and
the.
It was a little wobbly.
It wasn't great. And so that was fodder for the first crowd I mentioned, which is that he's not the guy. Well, Tua hears a lot about the first crowd. And I think he heard a lot about what the first crowd latched onto with his with that social media video. And this is what he had to say about people's opinions of his play and viability to lead the Dolphins where they have a roster that can be led to.
You know, for me, it's just zone that out. I mean, we come out to practice, everyone else, Twitter warriors, you know, keyboard warriors, whatever you want to call them. You know, they're not out here practicing with us working hard. So I don't know if you guys recorded that last one to Tyreek, but I don't know about you, but that looked like money.
I love it.
Salty Tua. Yeah.
I'm with it. I'm with
Salty
it.
Tua. Let me tell you something, Tua. Let me tell you something, Tua. I like the salt in your diet.
Wow.
I like it. I like it. More salt in the Tua wow. diet will serve everyone appropriately. Maybe that's Mike McDaniel, right? Maybe he's bringing a little bit of that heat.
Be honest,
you know?
There, man.
Well, you know, that video got out of Tua throwing a pass to Tyreek Hill, and it was just a little flutter, but people took that one video and ran with it.
Well, you heard what the media said. It was, we're not allowed to shoot it. We can't shoot it. But he's like, that was money. Look at him puffing his chest out.
Tua's like, you wasn't with me when I was shooting in the gym? Like Drake. I'd love it.
I mean, look at him with his chest out.
He's like, you're Twitter fingering and we're out here working.
Let's go, Salty Tua.
I'm here for it.
You know what, Warriors? He shouldn't shave either. Like, get the beard going.
Like Fitzmagic?
Nah, I mean, it's only one Fitzmagic beard. Right. Like he's Rutherford B. Hayes. No, I'm just talking about some...
little scruff.
Like
scruff.
Barry, like the current Barry. Yeah, and sure. HBO, a little yeah, like he's just, you know what?
Mean it up a little bit.
Yes.
We want a better fake for Tua than Barry.
Then come out, you know, I know he has the eye black sometimes. Mm-hmm. Come out like John Randall. Start barking at people.
He's
got the facial
going.
Hair he does. But you know what? It's too manicured. Like he's taking care of it.
Well, it's still Miami, Rich.
He's
still a single man in Miami, Rich.
But it's also, you know what else he should do is he should start staring at people as soon as he's done with his answers. Did you see that throw?
Did you?
Maybe you should add a little battery. Like, did you?
How he pretended to catch it.
It was a good throw.
Play that one more time. I didn't hear one more time.
We need a remix.
Fantastic. Here we go. Salty Tua. Hit it.
You know, for me, it's just zone that out. I mean, we come out to practice.
He's not zoning
everyone
it out.
Everyone else.
He's not.
Warriors,
he's seen everything.
You know, keyboard warriors, whatever you want to call
Twitter fingers.
Who are these
people? They're not out here practicing
Blockers.
With us working hard.
Yeah,
so
you ain't in
they're
the
not
gym.
There.
We doing
I don't know
thing.
If you guys recorded that last one to Tyreek. But
you see that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know about you, but that looked like money.
By the way, that needs to be a drop.
I don't know about you,
but that looked like money. That's a new drop. That's a new
drop.
Okay.
Got it. He said it with Rich. How'd he say it?
With his chest.
Yes.
With attitude. Man.
Yes.
With attitude.
Salt.
With his chest.
A little vinegar. Yeah. Little sea salt and vinegar chip right there.
Hey, I'm picking it. The Dolphins are winning the AFC.
Oh.
That's it right now. I'm calling it. I'm calling it.
Settle down just a little bit, says
sorry,
our Hoskins. Bills fan,
sorry,
Mike Hoskins.
All right, let me take that back. I forgot about the Bills. Okay?
Yeah, I forgot about that.
I got caught up in the moment.
All right. Salty Tua. Yeah, Salty Tua. I like it. I'm here for it. Before you go out the door, Mike Trout was supposed to meet with the media yesterday before the Yankees-Angels game that eventually got rained out. It was planned because not only does the New York market want to get a shot at the, you know, so-called or discussed modern-day Mickey Mantle, but a lot of reporters from Philly and South Jersey came up because he's going to Philadelphia next and they want to write stories about him coming back home. We see him at Eagles games, right, all the time in his Eagles uniform, his Eagle jersey sometimes, right?
Yep,
because he's a football fan. As we found out, he is the commissioner of the Fantasy League that led Tommy Pham to be so angered by Jock Peterson's either illegal rostering or uncaring meme sending that he slapped him across the face, earned a 3-game span. This is this. We can't stop talking about it.
without baby powder.
This is what Mike Trout had to say about it yesterday.
I talked to Tommy. I talked to Jock. Yeah, everybody in that was part of it. You know, just passionate about fantasy football. So.
You resigned?
What's that? Am I going to resign? I haven't made that decision. I don't know. But every commissioner I know always gets booed. So it's like I said, you know, Tommy and everybody in that was involved in that. You know, very passionate about fantasy football. I think a lot of people, you know, put their hearts to it, and I do too. I lost that league, so I have nothing to do with it. So
did Jack break the rules? You're the commissioner, so do the last word.
I'm not answering them questions. But, you know, it's in the past. You know, like I said, you guys are dragging it on. But it's a legendary fantasy football league for sure.
He's like, I can't believe I'm have to talk about this sort of thing.
Right?
So we found out. 12-man league.
Okay.
$10,000 buy-in, $10,000 penalty for finishing in last.
Oh.
Wait.
And Tommy Pham left it.
So you pay 10 to buy in.
Yeah.
And if you come in last, it's another 10.
Maybe he wants his money back.
That's big boy stuff, Chris. That's big boy stuff.
Maybe he hit Jock with the receipts.
Wow.
Yeah. This isn't over by a long shot.
For the real story behind some of wrestling's biggest moments, it's Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard and Conrad Thompson, too.
All-time Hogan opponents, Macho Man's got to be in the conversation. Where's Andre for you?
I've always said Andre was number one.
Wow.
Because even going back before, you know, Hulk Hogan was a babyface, Hulk and Andre were able to go in and headline at the New Orleans Superdome, at Shea Stadium in Japan. Wherever they went, that was an attraction.
Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.